Radio Gorgeous presents Gorgeous Lives, podcasts for women.
Do you think of her when you're with me?
Today I'm sitting with a woman who is still a model, still a fashion designer, still a singer, and still an actress. She's been famous since she was 15. She's the one and only Twiggy Lawson. A stupendous welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Hello, I love the name Radio Gorgeous.
It does what it says on the tin. So Twiggy, you were Leslie Hornby. Well, you still are deep down from Neasden.
No, I'm not. I'm Leslie Lawson, actually. I'm a respectable married lady.
Not sure about respectable. So first, let's talk about your childhood. Even though it was post-war, you seem to have had it all, more than kind of other people around you.
I was lucky. I had a really nice childhood, actually. I had a really nice mum and dad, two elder sisters. I've got a sister who's 7 years older than me and one who's 15. So she was almost like a second mum. And we didn't have lots of money, but my dad had the job, so we always had a car. I think we had the first TV in the street. And I was loved and adored, so you can't have more than that, can you?
No, it sounds like a good recipe. Your love of fashion started with your mother, who'd make clothes for you. Not just any clothes, but party clothes from American patterns. Did that make you kind of stand out from the crowd even then, do you think?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I loved clothes even as a little girl. And mum was very talented, and that's where I learnt to sew. And I still sew as a hobby. I love it. And it also, because I do my ranges now, I've got a big range I do in America. I've got a range in America called Twiggy London that we sell all over the United States. And here I do my line for M&S exclusively online. And so it's been very handy for me in the design process because I learned about, you know, the way clothes were put together.
Literally
so young.
Made. And you learned how
absolutely.
They're made.
It's
yeah. So different than looking at something.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So my mum sewed and I learned from her and my sisters sewed. And I became, you know, quite a good seamstress. And that's what I wanted to do before I was plucked from obscurity in 1966.
Exactly.
Age 16 and thrown into the modelling world.
So can I just say, Neasden, I've worked it up on a map, it's 25 minutes in the car to Marvel Arch.
That's right.
I'm just wondering,
close.
You're very close, but did you come up west?
That was a treat. On the corner of Marble Arch and Oxford Street, there used to be a Lion's Corner House. In the 1950s and probably the 60s, actually. I was a little girl in the 50s, and our treat every kind of month or so, we'd get on the bus and come up to Marble Arch and go to Lion's Corner House for our lunch, which we called dinner, actually. But
And your dad worked as a carpenter on film sets.
He did. Well, my dad was really talented. He became a master carpenter because at the age of 14, he lost his mum. So he had to look after the family. He was the eldest son. He was 14. He had four younger sisters. So he took a trade of carpentry because he was a very talented painter, actually. Okay. But, you know, when needs must, he went out and because his dad was a bit of a drunken nothing, really, as far as my dad was concerned. So my dad kind of took care of the girls. And then he came down to London to seek his fortune and met my mum.
Oh, yeah, because he's a northerner, isn't he?
He's from Bolton. Aye. That's where I get my good, sensible feet from,
yeah,
my
yeah.
dad. I mean, I love my mum, but yeah. she had a nerve problem. She yeah. Today it probably would have been bipolar. Mm. So, you know, she had long spells not being well. So my dad was like the rock, and he was amazing.
So were you more of a daddy's girl?
Yeah, probably.
By default, I
yeah,
suppose.
Yeah, yeah. I loved mum, but she yeah. had her problems.
Yeah.
And as I say, they probably treat it very differently
well,
today.
Well, now she'd just be given medication.
Yeah.
She'd be fine.
Well, she was. They gave her medication, but it was all very new, and yeah. they didn't really know what they were doing,
yeah.
I don't think.
No, totally.
But my dad was amazing. So, you know, he looked after us and was the breadwinner. And, you know, as I say, as a child, I never felt, oh, I'm not, you know, I haven't got anything and I haven't got this and I haven't got that.
But he did work at film studios, so you did, in the back of your mind, know that that kind of life was possible.
I did, yeah, because Dad yeah. used to take us to visit, but I was a very shy little girl. And I loved going with my dad. It never crossed my mind that I would do anything like that.
But I do think if it's gone in childhood, it just means there's a possibility. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
But it's there like, was no longing, no urge, no. I mean, it's interesting, because in our family photograph albums that we've got, Viv and Cheryl, my sisters, went to tap class and did all that. And there's pictures of them in their little outfits and hats. And my mum took me when I was about 6 or 7, and I ran out of the room screaming down the road and went home with her. I mean, I can remember going to children's parties and walking up to the front door, knocking on the door, giving the mum the present and going home. I was very antisocial, darling.
Were you confident underneath?
I've no idea. I mean, no. I'm talking about really young.
Yeah.
I just wanted to be with my mum.
You got into grammar school.
I did.
That's really hard.
Well, my middle sister Viv went to the same school. I loved school. I mean, I was a good student.
I loved it.
So it wasn't that I wanted to leave. No. You know, when what happened to me happened, I was as shocked as everyone else. And I was a bit sad, really, because I actually love school.
Yeah, well, that's good. That means you can fit in well, you know.
Oh, okay.
Then at 13, you became a mod.
Now
that was massive.
Yeah, 13
because
and a half, 14, 13, yeah.
And
that's when I used to make a lot of clothes because it was very important that you wore the right thing as a mod. And we used to follow a group of older girls because I was allowed to go out on a Saturday night to a mod club in Harrow. Mm-hmm. As long as I was home by 10:30, quite rightly. Because, I mean, we were only 14 and 15.
So young.
But it was pretty innocent. Although there were things like Purple Hearts going around. But, I mean, I didn't even think about taking things like that because the thought of it frightened me to death. And I think my dad had instilled in me that you don't do things like that. And there wasn't that much alcohol around in those days.
No.
Hi, this is Twiggy on Radio Gorgeous. And so, but the clothes, well, they were very important because you had to be in the right thing. So you couldn't go and buy a lot of them. So we'd see what the other girls were wearing and I'd go out and after school, you know, a department store and buy fabric and I'd make up, you know, the maxi skirt or the mini skirt. Well, it wasn't mini, it was, we did long skirts. And
yeah, because it was kind of the Edwardian look,
It was weird. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I look back at some of the, you know, one season it was grey pleated skirts with hush puppy shoes. I mean, I must have looked like olive oil with my legs. But you had to be dressed like that. And my hair was kind of, you either had it cut into a crop, which I didn't want to do, or I had it parted in the middle long. Kind of like a long bob. Kathy McGowan, but she had the fringe.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
She was like queen of the mods, wasn't she? Well, you're probably too young.
Yeah, I am. I'm more of a punk.
Yeah. I needed those clothes, and I used to make my friends their clothes as well. You know, it all came together, and I got really good at it.
Brilliant. So you're very creative. Then your life really began to change when you got a job as a Saturday girl up west. Queensway.
Yeah, where my sister Viv worked. She was a hairdresser there, and like most teenage girls, I wanted a job to earn some money. And I became a Saturday girl. I washed hair, picked up pins, swept the floor. I loved it. And there was another young girl there who was a full-time junior. I mean, I only did Saturdays. Kay, her name was, and she was a mod. And she had the spiky hair, and I thought she was the bee's knees. And she and I used to save our pocket money up, and every kind of fourth or fifth Saturday, we'd get on the tube from Queensway to High Street Ken. I think it was there. It might have been Bayswater Station, High Street Ken. Run down the road because the new Bieber had just opened. And we'd buy a dress or a pair of shoes. And Bieber was like the saviour of the teenager, really, for clothes. Barb Hulanicki. She's one of my best friends.
Okay.
And she's a genius. She's my style icon, actually.
Yes.
Because without her, you wouldn't have the high street that we've got now. You know, there were no clothes for teenage girls. You either bought children's clothes that went up to 15, and then the next shop were mum's shops.
And
you know,
tweed suits. And
what your mum wore.
Yeah.
So Barbara, more than anyone, changed that.
Yeah.
And she gave us Bieber, which was like, I can remember when I first walked in there, I thought I'd died and gone to heaven.
Why was it different then?
Because it was an experience. Apart from the clothes, the first shop on Abingdon Road, it was a little Victorian shop front, and you'd go inside. You know, most shops that I'd gone to with my mum, they were either department stores or women's clothing stores, bright lights, frumpy clothes on rails. You walked into Bieber, I don't know if you've ever seen pictures, and it was like this. It was like walking into this room. I'm sitting in my sitting room now, which is very Bieber influenced. Their original Bieber lampshades, actually.
Wow.
From 90, I kept them.
Is that from right 19... from when she had the giant department store?
Yeah.
Yeah,
But I had loads of them. But I kept, I've got about six of them. I love them.
God, they're still looking fabulous.
Yeah, well, yeah. I did take the fringe off and wash it and put it all back on because I was frightened it was going to disintegrate.
And your big kind of feathers.
Yeah. So it's very, very kind of Victoriana. And Beeb was Victoriana meets Art Deco. And there were feathers everywhere and these wonderful lampshades and pop music playing. So even if you didn't go in to buy something, just to be there, and all the sales girls were gorgeous, all really skinny with black eye makeup and feather boas. It was like, oh, my God.
This is really gorgeous.
She was
this
so
is a gorgeous love.
And that was the thing that kind of opened your mind then, really.
Yeah, you just suddenly thought, here's somebody doing something for my age group, which hadn't happened before. And that's what happened in the mid-60s. Suddenly it was very good to be young. It was very good to be working class. I was really the first working class model, really.
They were all kind of posh, tall, good girls. Yeah.
They became models. They were usually middle class or upper class. And they became models until they met their rich husband.
Yes, yes, yes.
It was like something to do if they were pretty enough. So I came right out of left field. I didn't look like any of them.
But also you do say, because they, you know, in the media it says Justin de Villeneuve found you and created you. But you,
he happened
you said,
to be my boyfriend at the time. Yeah. I think he got lucky, actually.
Yeah, lucky.
I think, you know, the person who really changed my life was Leonard, who cut my hair, and Barry Latigan, who took that first photograph. They were the two big instigators in what happened.
And then the
third person, otherwise I wouldn't be sitting here, it was Deirdre McSherry. She was the fashion editress of the Daily Express. Mm-hmm. And when Leonard cut my hair in that little bob, because a fashion editor had sent me there to have my hair cut so I could have a test shot, and she told me I probably wouldn't make a model because I was too small and too thin. But she said, you've got quite an interesting look. Let's do a new haircut. And she sent me to Leonard. So, and then Leonard got Barry Latigan to photograph the headshot, and he hung the picture in the salon, which was a beautiful salon in Belgravia, very posh. And Deirdre McSherry was a client, and she came in and said, oh, I love the haircut. Who's the girl? And Leonard said, oh, she's a schoolgirl. Her nickname's Twiggy because she's so skinny. And Deirdre said, I want to meet her. And I met her for tea. And 2 weeks later, she wrote that big page that said Twiggy, the face of 66.
Double page spread.
Yeah. And my life changed forever.
Was it really the corny thing of being overnight? Was it really?
Well, it literally was. It wasn't overnight. It was over 2 months.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah.
But you got to remember, in those days, newspapers didn't write about models. There was hardly any fashion in newspapers.
Yes,
so
yes.
She was an innovator, Deirdre, actually.
Is she still around?
Yeah. I saw her, actually, about 3 years ago. And she runs or manages a kind of textile museum down in Bath or something.
Fabulous.
She's lovely.
I'll look her up.
Yeah, and she's gorgeous.
So it all went completely mad. And you were treated like a pop star because they didn't know about kind of models. So you were, though, weren't you?
I was.
What was it like having, like, people screaming and stuff?
It was weird. I mean, I was only 16 and a half. It didn't really happen like that until I went to the States.
Okay.
And then it got silly and I almost got squashed. And people used to come up and say, oh, God, can I touch you? Oh, God, you're so cute. Can I touch you? You know, and it was like, oh, God, no, don't touch me.
And were you still really shy then, would you say?
Yeah. I mean, it was so weird. I didn't quite understand. It was exciting.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, all I'd ever done was gone to school. So suddenly, oh, mad when I think back. I was going to Paris and you know, working with amazing photographers. That was my luck, really.
Yes.
That I, right at the beginning, I did the teenage magazines. But then very soon, I went up to the kind of top echelon. And I was working for American Vogue and English Vogue and Elle magazine. And
yeah, because how many covers were you on? When I look you up, it's
many. I've never counted, but quite a lot.
Yeah.
And then the big, big, big break.
Yeah.
In my eyes, was Diana Vreeland,
yes,
who was the editress. She was like the Anna Wintour then, and she was like the fashion doyenne of the world.
I think she still is. I think she's
extraordinary woman.
Yeah.
And she heard about me and saw pictures of me, and she said, I want her, and she flew me to New York.
So you're basically a kind
of... And that was in 67.
Wow.
It wasn't just about being famous in England.
No.
It went global. It's almost like the royal tap.
Yeah.
and put me in front of the camera with Richard Avedon, who was the great fashion photographer of last century, I think, and one of the sweetest men in the world. And it was interesting because when he photographed, you know, I'd done mainly teenage magazines. And suddenly when I worked with Dick for American Vogue, he took me to another level. They're much more mature, the pictures. They're not cute and cookie. You know, they always wanted me to cross my toes and knock knees and be really...
angular.
Yeah. And he found a beauty and he did all those amazing leaping shots, which he started all that, all those flying through the air pictures. And his photographs, not only of me, but of all those girls then, are so beautiful.
This is Radio Gorgeous, and this is A Gorgeous Life.
So happy, are you missing the way it used to be? And I have changed this home around more often lately.
You were famous in America. You went to New York. You went to a party in LA, and Steve McQueen turned up.
He did, on his motorbike.
Yeah, and he asked you to dance.
And I said no.
That must be a
That was shyness. No, I was so embarrassed. No, Sonny and Cher threw the party for me in LA.
Wow.
It was bonkers. It was mad. It was lovely, though.
So you were all the time going out with Justin. He was 10 years older than you. I mean, are you shocked now looking back, thinking about that?
Not really, because, you know, when you meet somebody, you don't even...
Think
I mean, he was 24 when I met him, which is when I think now.
Yes!
It's a baby. And okay, I was 16, but you know.
You started hanging out in the bohemian area of London, which was the late 60s, was Notting Hill. You made friends with a flamboyant film director, Ken Russell, and his costume designer wife, Shirley. And he decided he wanted to make a film of a 1920s musical, The Boyfriend. And he said, you have got to be the lead in it.
That's
right. What a shock.
Well, I actually met Ken about another project about 2 years before, in about 1968. And you've got to remember that period in the 60s, he was the hottest director in England. He was huge, very controversial, the most divine man, absolutely bonkers and wonderful and eccentric, and I loved him to bits. I met him about this other film that didn't happen because of finance or whatever, you know. And but we became friends, and I loved Shirley as much as I loved Ken. And he used to have these amazing nights on Friday at his house, and he'd screen old Busby Berkeley films and Fred and Ginger films. And we'd have these wonderful nights, and Shirley would make a big bowl of spaghetti, and all the kids, they had six children, and they'd all come in and we'd watch a film and sing. And he, I mean, I always look upon him as my further education, because he introduced me to classical music and to all these amazing... period film
because
directors.
He loved Elgar, didn't he?
Yeah, and all the film directors from Europe, Eisenstein and Mamoulian, and all the ones who did those incredible films in the 30s and 40s. And so we became a friendship with them. And then in about 68, late 68, 69, I went to see a production of The Boyfriend on stage. It was a revival. And The Boyfriend is, as you said, a 20s musical that was actually written in the 50s.
Nice.
It's a pastiche of the 20s, and thought it was the most wonderful thing I'd seen. I loved it. And we were having dinner with Ken and Shirley the next night, and I was telling Ken all about it. And by the end of the evening, Ken, who'd had a lot of champagne, said, I've got a great idea. I've always wanted to do a musical. Let's do The Boyfriend, and you can be Polly Brown. And I thought, oh, he's just had too much to drink. And went home, didn't really think about it. You know, because I was, you know, I was 19. I was at the top of my game.
Yeah.
I was modelling. I was travelling the world. I was very happy. I had no ambitions to act or anything, really. And he rang me the next day, stone cold sober, and said, what do you think? And I said, what? And he said, about doing the film. I said, oh, my God. Are you sure? I've never done that. But, you know, I've never done anything.
Yeah,
he said,
no,
what?
You hadn't acted,
he said,
you hadn't sung, you hadn't danced.
I'd done a little bit of recording with the producer, but nothing major.
No, and dancing.
No, dancing. That was the big thing for me. That was scary. And he said, I think we should do it. And he said, I'm doing The Devils. He was filming The Devils. He said, you go off to dance class and singing lessons. So I did. And then it took him a year to get the studios to agree to
do it.
Thank
God for that.
Yeah, thank God. Yeah. And in 1960, 69, 70, we shot it, and it came out, I think, in 71.
Well, I remember seeing it as a kind of seven-year-old, and I absolutely loved
it. It's a great little film. It's one of his sweetest films, because Ken did make very controversial films. Wonderful film.
Yeah, but women in love. I couldn't have seen
it when I was six. Yeah, you couldn't. No, I think I'm the only family film he made. And every little girl loves it, of every generation. Yeah. I get kids coming up to me today whose mum has shown them it, because it's such a sweet film.
I remember so well the sets, you know, the kind of curves and the colours. I remember
he was a master of that. It was a bit mad and it went into fantasies, but it is a wonderful film. And and it got very well received, and I won 2 Golden Globe Awards, which was amazing to me because I didn't think I could do that. And so I always used to say to Ken, you know, him giving me that chance, it was like going into the secret garden, because I didn't know that you could do that, and I didn't know it could happen. And what, of course, once I got my feet a bit wet, that's what I wanted to do. And that's why at the age of 20, I kind of quit modelling.
Which is so shocking if you think that was only 4 years.
I know, 4 years. Hi, this is Twiggy on Radio Gorgeous. Somebody said to me the other day, you've actually modelled longer, my second stint of modelling, than in my first, which is mad. Because I only did it for 4 years, and then I did The Boyfriend, and then out of The Boyfriend I got a recording deal and a TV series in America, and then another film, you know, and it just... And then by the early 80s I was on Broadway.
Yes, I want to talk about that. That was like your... Sounds like one of your favourite times in your
career. It was, and it's the thing I'm most proud of, because it's one thing to do a film, which again was new territory, but to go out on stage in front of 1,500 people 8 times a week, I didn't think I could do. It was like a masterclass for me, really, and working with these extraordinary people. I mean, Tommy Tune, who cast me in it, and I'd met him, he was in The Boyfriend.
Okay.
And we became great buddies. And he'd gone back to New York after The Boyfriend and become this hugely successful director. But he was also an incredible song and dance man himself. He's one of the great tap dancers ever. After about 10 years of directing, he decided he wanted to go back on stage. And he was, again, this huge hot director. And the producer said to him, what do you want to do next? And he said, I want to do a period musical with Gershwin music, and I want Twiggs to star opposite me. And I said, did they all choke on their coffee when you said that? But he had the power to pull it off.
And that was called My One and Only, and you performed it for 2 years. I can't believe that.
But it was an extraordinary 2 years. It's quite an experience to star on Broadway.
Yeah.
And it was a huge, huge success.
Why didn't you do it in England?
Because Tommy didn't want to come to England. And quite honestly, at that time he didn't. I'd done it for 2 years. 2 years is a long time. I needed my life back. Yeah, I had a 5-year-old daughter by then. I needed to get back here and regroup with my family. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It was like a lot had gone down, and I'd lost my husband, and Carly was my main priority. You know, and you can't just go on doing one show forever. It did come here much later with other people in it, not with us.
Now, you said that it was sad, though, leaving in America, because they were all your friends.
They were, but it was hard because I had my mum and the dad here, my sisters, all my other friends. And I felt for Carly it was a good thing.
You want to bring her up in England.
But to be fair, to be truthful about it, we came back. I thought, I'll go back for the summer. Well, actually, I came over to do a film, The Doctor and the Devils, we did with Jonathan Pryce and Timothy Dalton. And I played the tart with a heart of gold, which was fun. And then I thought, I'll have the summer in England with my family, and then I think I'll go back to New York, because I was kind of missing that. And America's always been very good to me career-wise. And then I met Lee.
My fingernails are filthy. I've got beach tar.
Gorgeous Lives was brought to you by Radio Gorgeous Productions. For more information, go to radiogorgeous.com.
Carrie, get out your cane. Put on some silk.
I'll put on some silk.
Oh, you're a mean old daddy, but I like you. Come on down to the Mermaid Cafe, and I will buy you a bottle of wine. And we'll laugh and toast to nothing and smash our empty glasses down. Let's have a round for these freaks and these soldiers, a a round for these friends of mine. Let's have another round for the bright red devil who keeps me in this tourist town. Come on, Carrie, get out your cane. I'll put on some silk.
I'll put on some silk.
Oh, you're a mean old daddy, but I like you. I like you. I like you. I like you. Maybe I'll go to Amsterdam, or maybe I'll go to Rome and rent me a grand piano and put some flowers around my room. But let's not talk about fare-thee wells now. The night is a starry dawn, and they're playing that scratchy rock and roll beneath the mantle moon. Come on, Carrie, get out your cane.
Carrie, get out your cane.
Put on some silk.
I'll put on some silk.
You're a mean old daddy, but I like. Last night I couldn't sleep. Oh, you know it sure is hard to leave it, but it's really not my home. Maybe it's been too long a time since I was scrambling down in the street. Now they got me used to that clean white linen and that fancy French cologne. Oh, Carrie, get out your cane.
Carrie, get out your cane.
I'll put on my finest silk.
Radio Gorgeous, giving you a voice. Why not leave us a voice message? Over to you now.